Good afternoon. I'm Patrick Svitek, and I want to thank you all for joining us for today's virtual event from the Texas Tribune. I'm here today with Tony Gonzalez, the Republican nominee for Texas's 23rd Congressional District. For the next half hour, we'll be discussing Tony's campaign and the road to Election Day. I'll be asking Tony some questions, and we'll also be getting to some audience-submitted questions throughout the event. Before we get started, just a little bit of housekeeping. First, early voting is now underway. Registered voters who want to vote early can do so between now and October 30th at their local polling place. You can visit texastribune.org to see a copy of your ballot and all the news that you need to know before you head to the polls. And I'd like to introduce today's guest, Tony Gonzalez. Tony is a former Navy cryptologist, and he is running to replace retiring Republican Congressman Will Hurd in the 23rd District. Congressman Hurd has endorsed Tony, as have President Donald Trump and top Republican leaders in the House. His Democratic opponent in the race is Gina Ortiz Jones, who nearly unseated Hurd in 2018. The 23rd District, which stretches from western San Antonio to just outside of El Paso, has a history of close contests and is drawn to be Texas's only true swing congressional district. Tony, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, thanks, Patrick. Thanks, Texas Tribune, for having me. Excited about it.
Yeah, thank you very much for being here. Now, this is obviously, we're at a very contentious and noisy stage of this race, but before we get into some of the issues of the day, for those who may just be tuning into this race, tell us a little bit about yourself and why you think you're the right candidate for this district at this moment.
Yeah, it's it boils down to I love this country. You know, at 2 months old, my father abandoned me. At 6 years old, my mother remarried. It was an abusive relationship. And I remember spending some time in a battered women's shelter. I go on to live on my own since I was 15. And I joined the Navy at 18 years old without a high school diploma. I came in as an E-1. 20 years later, I retire as a Master Chief, the highest enlisted rank. And now I'm finishing up my PhD. So when I talk about the American dream, when I talk about fighting for the American dream, I am the American dream. So this district represents me, represents who, my values, and I represent them and their values.
What's giving you hope in this race at this point? As maybe some folks don't know this, but your Democratic opponent was able to win her primary outright in March. You had to go through a crowded primary, a runoff, and then a recount. So just naturally, you started a little farther back in the timeline of the general election. What at this point, how do you assess the state of play of the race at this point? And what gives you optimism? And what are some of the challenges you think you still face with, I think, 12 days to go?
We're in a great spot. Look, my opponent's been running for 4 years. We're in a great spot because of this. From day one, my entire goal was to just to be who I am. And that's what we've done. You know, our push cards from the beginning were in English and Spanish. Guess what? There weren't any Spanish-speaking primary voters that I was talking to, but it wasn't intended for them. This was all about, it's always been about winning the general election. And we're excited about the position that we're in. I mean, it's just a night and day difference. We've traveled this district time and time again. You mentioned it, you know, it's a split district, if you will. It's very diverse. The people in San Antonio are much different than the people in the lower valley in El Paso. And the people along the border in Del Rio and Eagle Pass are night and day different than the people out in West Texas. So beyond the amount of terrain you have to cover, the people are just different. They have different livelihoods. They have different priorities. So what I'm excited about is we have connected with people across the spectrum. I mean, we've got folks that aren't voting for the president that are voting for us. So I think at the end of the day, we will win this race by showing people that we're going to represent them and we're going to show up.
Got it. I mentioned some of those issues that are getting pretty contentious right now. As you know, healthcare is a front and center issue in this race. As I'm sure you're well aware, a lot of the Democratic attack ads against you in this race are based on, I think, at least what they cite is a candidate questionnaire that you filled out maybe during the primary runoff, where you seem to express support for, quote, eliminating the Affordable Care Act, which obviously provides protections for people with pre-existing conditions right now. Now, I know you say you support protecting people with pre-existing conditions, and we can go round and round on that all day. I guess I figure I'd ask this question a little bit of a different way. Do you have any regret filling out that questionnaire in that way, or is that still the position that you would espouse today?
So, you know, I did 20 years in the military. I retired in July, and I jumped into the race in August. And what I've learned in the political process, that no matter what you do, they're going to attack you with something, right? And you're seeing this across the nation. The thing is, I'm not your typical Republican. You can't run this vanilla playbook against me. You talk about pre-existing conditions. Well, I have a pre-existing condition. I deal with it every day. You know, last year, I go into BAMC to get a routine hernia repair done. They intubated me incorrectly. I coded brain trauma, kidney failure. I was on dialysis. I was in a coma for 3 days. I was in the hospital for 23 days. That was a year ago, right? So when we talk about pre-existing conditions, it's real to me. You know, I spent some time in DC, and it's all about props, right? It's all about having the props on the floor. So this was a facility that I visited in San Antonio. And the reason why I want to bring this up was this was a group of nephrologists that focused on dialysis, right? And I go there and I have this conversation, and I'm 40 now, right? Fairly young guy. And I go, man, I was on dialysis. It saved my life. And we walk through it. And at the very end of the tour is I visit this floor, and there's all these patients that are receiving treatment, right? All of them. I mean, there must have been 25, 30 people kind of socially distanced, kind of receiving treatment. And this was the takeaway for me was, one, you know, the doctor was like, hey, they got to receive treatment twice a week. If they don't do that, they will die. Like, it was like, whoa. And oh, by the way, you know, you would have to do that as well if you wouldn't have recovered as well. That was one thing. But the takeaway that was like not in words was everybody in that room was Hispanic. Everybody. Everybody in that room was Mexican. Most of them didn't speak English. So I'm walking around. This district is over 70% Hispanic. So when I talk about representing their values, that's part of it. You know, is highlighting those things. So for the pre-existing, of course, I will always protect and defend pre-existing conditions because I have one, because the people that I represent deal with that. And at the end of the day, it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, and you know, the central tension here in this issue is saying you want to protect pre-existing conditions, but having expressed support for, quote, eliminating Obamacare in the past. I asked this question because there's another battleground congressional race in this state, in the 32nd district, where the Republican candidate Genevieve Collins has basically gotten to the point where she said, you know, it just doesn't make sense any longer to basically say we're going to repeal Obamacare. It's not going to happen. Republicans haven't gotten their act together in Congress. Are you in that boat, or would you stick with what you expressed in that candidate questionnaire, that you still want to see the Affordable Care Act eliminated?
Yeah. So as I made my way around the district, just time and time again, this is what it boils down to. It boils down to me, not me representing the district and what the district wants. And this is what I've seen. You know, I've seen rural hospitals, you know, throughout the district, you know, in El Paso, in Del Rio, in Fort Stockton, in Monahans, Texas, tell me that the Affordable Care Act is broken, right? They go, it's broken, and we need to fix it. The issue is, it's not an easy fix, right? The issue is, it takes folks to come together and come up with a solution to it. It's not just this one size fits all. In my district, and I respect other people's opinions, I respect other people's positions. In District 23, the Affordable Care Act does not work, right? So we need to come up with a replacement to that. I look forward to getting on the Hill and working towards a replacement that covers pre-existing conditions.
Got it. We could probably spend the entire time on this, but I will move on. Thank you for answering the questions. Another issue that always comes up in this district is border security and immigration. As you know, this district covers more of the U.S.-Mexico border than any other congressional district in the country. The outgoing incumbent, Congressman Hurd, built a reputation for being an opponent of a border wall, at least, quote, from sea to shining sea, as he used to describe it, or still does describe it. I've heard you talk about the border wall a little bit, so I just wanted to drill down a little bit on that. Do you support any additional construction of border wall as it is today?
I'll go back to my experience in the district, right? So I was in Del Rio, and we did a tour with the Border Patrol, right? So I'm talking to experts. I mean, they see it every day. My thought process is my expertise is national security, right? I did 20 years of that, fought in Iraq, fought in Afghanistan. That's my expertise. I'm not the type of person that has this ivory tower approach. You know, there's a saying in Spanish, it's called yo mando. Like, basically, I know what's best. I rule. That's not the way I lead. I lead by listening. I was raised by my grandparents, and I use that as an opportunity. I use that experience to listen to others. So I'm on the border in Del Rio, getting this wonderful tour, walking me through the good, the bad, the ugly. It was very personal. And this is what they've told me is the wall, the fence, the barrier, whatever you want to call it, works. Okay. They go, it works. You know, it funnels traffic, but there's parts where it makes no sense. There's terrain that doesn't make sense. We have to utilize other things. I was just in Tornillo, and I'm going to show you another photo here. So these are farmers. These are pecan and cotton farmers, right? And Tornillo is in El Paso County. And I visited them maybe about a week and a half ago. And we're going over there. We're talking about, you know, they're walking me through their farm. And we're talking about water and all these other issues. And oh, by the way, the old fence is in the back of their property. So we go back there. We check it out. They're putting up the new wall, however you want to describe it. And this is what they've told me. They go, look, before there was anything there, we would get 30 illegal aliens pass through our property every day. Since that barrier is up, we see about 3 illegal aliens a month. So they go, it works. But my thought process is I respect private property. And what I don't want to have happen is the federal government come down and dictate to farmers, to ranchers, to public property owners that this is the way, this is what will happen. So that's why I believe a wall where it makes sense, added technology. I'm a cryptologist. Technology makes sense to me, you know, whether it's drones, whether it's sensors, whether it's surveillance equipment. Go back to the Border Patrol agent. You know, a lot of times they're alone and unafraid with a pair of binoculars. But there's vehicles that they have, and those vehicles are really force multipliers. That makes sense to me. But, and I'll stop here so we can go on. I can turn it back over to you. But here's the deal. Everybody wants to go, are you for the wall or against the wall? I would love nothing more than to shift that conversation to, are you for legal immigration? Because I think most people would say, yes, I'm for legal immigration. I say it over and over again. I'm fighting for the American dream. I believe in the American dream. The American dream doesn't always start in America. And I think it's beautiful that we attract these people here. They should come in through the front door. We should know who's coming into our country. But that's what makes America so special, is our diversity.
So you would say, just getting back to the question I asked, you would say you support additional wall construction in the areas where local officials are making a persuasive case to you that it may be needed in a targeted way.
Absolutely.
You ran during the, I think it was the primary, the runoff, one of your TV ads mentioned you were running for Congress to, quote, finish the wall. How do you square that with the position that you're now describing?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what is happening. I mean, you've seen the administration continue to build out and make border security a priority, and it's working. I mean, it is. You travel these locations. Here's the deal. You got to travel the location. Like, you can't, we can't do a Zoom from the border. Like, you got to be there.
Sure. I want to get to that. I got a question on that,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, well, you got to be there, so.
Right. So when you talk about finish the wall, at least retroactively looking at that claim and that ad, you're not referring to finishing a wall across the entire border.
A wall from sea to shining sea does not make sense to me. I think it's wasteful resource-wise. I think there's better ways for us to cover that terrain. And I go back to it. The people that live that life every day are not suggesting that. I go back at the end of the day, this is about me representing them.
Got it. You alluded to the kind of very uncertain times that we're in with the coronavirus pandemic. And I want to talk about how you and your opponent have been campaigning in different ways. But first, just tell me what you're hearing from folks in the district about the relief that they need? Obviously, Congress has been at a gridlock on the latest relief package. What would you like to see in that package if you had a say in it today?
Gridlock. That was a nice word to say.
It's very generous.
Congress is chaos, man. It's like you can't get people in the same room. They're just dug in. Both sides are dug in. They don't want to solve anything. It's always the other person's fault. I don't view the world that way. I didn't grow up that way. I grew up in the military where you didn't ask the person next to you, are you a Democrat? Are you a Republican? What church do you go to? Who do you go to bed with? None of that mattered. What mattered was, are you going to help me fight America's adversaries? And if the answer was yes, we're going to be the best of friends. So as I make my way around the district, this is what people tell me. We are hurting. We are just trying to survive ourselves, our families, our businesses. Please, let's get back to work. Please reopen, please help reopen the border for economic purposes. At the end of the day, I fully support a second stimulus package, coronavirus stimulus package. I think a lot of people need that. That should be something we should be able to get passed into law. But the problem is we've got these bureaucrats that are up in D.C. that are just so dug in, they'd rather put their party above their districts.
Well, we had a little more specific audience question on this topic, so I'll toss it in here from Craig. He said, do you support the HEROES Act? Why or why not? Or would you have supported the HEROES Act?
Yeah, hey, Craig, thanks for that question. Look, the HEROES Act was a partisan-ish effort. And you see a lot of this, right? You see a lot of this, Republicans put together one thing, Democrats put together the other, and they just kind of try to shove it down your throat. And it's the wrong way to do things. That's great for campaigning. You get your base ignited and you blame the other folks. Oh, I can't believe they didn't pass this. The reality, governing is about unity and coming together and making that, making a package that benefits everybody, not just the people that are going to vote for you. The HEROES Act, great name. A lot of these bills have great names, and they're full of things that don't represent the name. So I think that was doomed to fail from the beginning.
I want to move on here quickly, but what was like just one objectionable piece of that legislation, or what just like one substantive objection to it?
Yeah, I mean, it was just the amount of funds that were just thrown in there, kind of like willy-nilly, like trillions. Like, we're throwing trillions of dollars and just pen-whipping it. Look, people are hurting. I believe in a package. I think that makes sense. But it's we have to be good stewards of the public's funds. And, we can't just be shelling out $4 trillion bills and just filling them with these wants in there. It has to really be impactful. Look, the PPP loans were effective. I think that was important. I think that saved a lot of small businesses, kept them going. But there's also a lot of small businesses that did not get access to that. That would be something I would want included in the next stimulus package.
Got it. Staying on this topic of the pandemic, and you referenced this earlier, and I've heard you talk about it, that this district needs more than a quote virtual representative. You've been much more willing to resume in-person campaigning than your Democratic opponent. I've seen you guys have butted heads over this. What have you been doing to make sure that you're campaigning in a safe and responsible way as you've been the candidate in this race who has, again, been more willing to resume in-person campaigning?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's a respect thing. It's about showing up and respecting others, being respectful of them, not only for safety reasons, but also their time and their issues. Like, the only way you know their issues is if you meet with them. It's a different interaction than holding a Facebook Live or anything like that. It just is. So what we've done is, we follow all the procedures, but the most important thing is just to respect one another. I probably wash my hands more than I've ever washed my hands. Certainly carry around hand sanitizer like everyone else does. But it boils down to this, like your willingness to represent the district. Will Hurd, I'll talk about Will Hurd just briefly. He held this seat three cycles. Here you have a Black man holding a Hispanic district. That's 50-50, and you're like, this isn't supposed to happen. But he did it because he worked his tail off. He was in these Dairy Queens. He was in all these little towns getting in front of folks. We've done the exact same thing. And I get it. You know, my opponent has kind of said, we want to be respectful of other people, until all of a sudden she's out campaigning now. Like, that's the thing that gets me, is like, hey, were you lying then? Are you lying now? Or like, are you behind in the polls now? Like, why all of a sudden, 2 weeks before election day, you've come out and now you're campaigning safely? Like, why couldn't you have done that from the beginning, just like I have?
Anyone doesn't have to look too far, and this is happening in a number of races, but to find photos of candidates like yourself who did resume in-person campaigning earlier than their Democratic opponent, appearing at events indoors, in some cases without masks. When you look at, when you see those photos and you see some of the criticism you get, have you looked back at any instance over the past few months and thought, yeah, maybe I should have been a little more careful, maybe I should have worn a mask, even if you felt comfortable in the situation and the people around you felt comfortable? Do you think it sent the wrong message to be publicly appearing in photos without a mask in those settings?
So I don't wear a mask when I do interviews. I don't wear a mask when I take a shower. I don't wear a mask to go to bed. I don't wear a mask when I eat. I don't wear a mask when I'm in outdoor public settings. I wear a mask when I have to wear a mask and to be safe around others, right? I think it goes back to this, like, people just have to be respectful and sensible in how they do things. Look, hey, if there was data that said, you know, Tony, we need you to wear this helmet and you're going to keep people safe and everybody needs to wear this, you know, this Darth Vader suit to walk around, cool, man, we do that. But don't, I mean, like, this image of, like, if I'm not wearing a, I'm not wearing a mask right now, I mean, you're not wearing a mask. I mean, it's just one of these things to go, like, some of it gets a little ridiculous, right? But at the end of the day, this is about safety. This is about ensuring that those around us are safe, that we're being respectful. Look, coronavirus is real. People are hurting. People are dying. Right? We have to take it as such. And I've done that. I will continue to do that. At the same time, like, we have to live our lives. Like, we can't just, we can't just hunker down. I go back, and I'll turn it right over. I go back to first responders. You know, I'm going to throw another photo here. This is a great Popeye photo, man. It's like Texas 23. So this was Crystal City. So Crystal City, small town in Zavala County. And oh, by the way, this county is as blue as it gets. So I go visit there, and here you had this EMS facility that's, man, it was just alone and unafraid. You know, they have 7 employees. None of them have healthcare. They're getting paid $10 an hour, right? These are the first responders. I mean, they're getting paid less than what you get paid at Chick-fil-A or, you know, some of these other places. But yet here they were, going out, not taking a day off, not hunkering down. They were fighting for their communities. That's what's beautiful about America. Like, look, we need to fight and get them more money. We need to fight and get them more resources and make sure they have the tools to do their job. But they didn't take any days off. They don't take any days off. That's an example of Texas 23.
Got it. We've got about several minutes left here. I want to ask you one final question of my own, and then we'll get to some leftover audience submitted questions. I got to ask about Donald Trump. You mentioned at the beginning of the interview that you're appealing to and reaching out to voters who may not vote for the president but will vote for you. Tell me specifically, from a policy perspective, what do you have to offer those voters? Like, if you're talking to someone who is going to vote for Joe Biden, not going to vote for Donald Trump, how do you separate from the president, or what is that appeal based on?
Yeah, I mean, one, the appeal is I represent this district. I live in the district. My opponent doesn't. I'm raising my family in the district. My opponent doesn't have a family. At the end of the day, I'm Hispanic. She's not Hispanic. I mean, these things matter. They matter in a district that is 71% Hispanic. They might not matter in some of these other races, but they matter here. So really, I don't kind of like, hey, this is the secret sauce. I just go, this is who I am. And oh, by the way, I'm a lot like you. Look, this past weekend, we baptized two of my children. We baptized Gabriel and we baptized Isabella, right? And it was a beautiful moment. I had family come out and you know, from across different places. And it was great. Guess what? That is Texas 23. Texas 23 is about family. It's about faith. And it's patriots that love this country, right? So it's not like this policy position. Like, I'll give you something because you asked and I want to be respectful of your question. Like, look, I will often talk about expanding work visa programs. Like, that makes sense to me, right? Folks that want to come into the country to work legally, let's put them to work, right? I think that helps a lot of industries, farmers and ranchers, you know, the construction industry, all these various different industries. That may be an area that maybe is a little bit different.
Got it. And you know, yeah, I got to jump in there. You said that on the claim that Jean Ortiz Jones doesn't live in the district, you know that she has a rental property in Washington and Northern Virginia. She has lived in the district since she came back home to run in 2017. Have you seen any evidence to the contrary that she doesn't currently reside, live her life in the district, even if she doesn't own property in the district?
Here's my smoking gun. You ready for it? I'm giving you an exclusive.
I covered the price last cycle, so
I'm giving you an exclusive on why my opponent, why I know my opponent doesn't live in this district. She said, "I can't believe it's raining. Right? It's causing this traffic jam. This rain is causing all this traffic jam." The people in District 23 don't see it that way. The people in District 23, they see rain and they go, "Praise God, it's raining, because our cattle need it, our crops need it." That's how I know she doesn't live in the district. She does not represent the values of South and West Texas.
Got it. It's certainly another issue like out there. We can go around and forever, but I want to get to our some audience submitted questions here. And this one, I think, is a timely issue because this morning the Senate Judiciary Committee confirmed Amy Coney Barrett, Trump's nominee to the Supreme Court. I know that you're not running for the Senate, but this is obviously an issue that is top of mind for a lot of voters right now voting in multiple races. Do you agree with the kind of sped up timeline that we've seen to get her confirmed before Election Day? Or do you think that could have waited until Election Day? Or do you think the next president, whoever the next president is, should have had a say on that?
Yeah, I mean, I look at the Constitution. What does it say in the Constitution? I look at precedents, what has happened in previous times. And I think all that falls in line with both of those. I try not to talk about, it's so easy to get distracted by all this other stuff. And I'm not, it's important, man. The Supreme Court is important, but my district is just trying to survive, man. I want to get one more video, one more up. These are veterans from San Elizario in El Paso County. And these veterans, you know, they're patriots. They love this country. They love this country. Oh, by the way, not all of them are Republicans, right? I go back to this. There's all this infighting, and I get it, and I understand it. And I trust me, I know the stakes are high. But for me, this is about bringing the country together and working together for the betterment of this district, Texas, and America.
We'll squeeze one more audience question in here during the last 2 minutes, 1.5 minutes. And this was just a reader question. Would you increase funding for national defense?
So to me, look, I'm a national security guy. I look at it as, what are you doing with the funds, right? It's about efficiency, not necessarily throwing money at a problem. So look, I'm not opposed to it, but I want to know where that money is going and how that money is spent. And I think there's ways for us to be efficient in it. The first thing I will do from a national security standpoint that I think would be helpful is to pass a budget, like get off these CRs, these continuous resolutions, time and time again, put our national security at risk. So we have to get back to passing a budget. I'm on record supporting our military bases. My opponent is on record supporting BRAC and leaving it up to Washington bureaucrats in order to do that. That's detrimental. It's detrimental to Laughlin, to Camp Bullis, to Fort Bliss out in El Paso. So for me, I'm always about supporting the military, and that starts by protecting our bases, not closing them down.
Thank you very much. And with that, we are just about out of time. Thank you to everyone for tuning in, and thank you to Tony for joining us. Finally, a reminder that if you want to follow the latest election with our weekly 2020 newsletter. Go to trib.it/2020 to subscribe. Have a wonderful rest of your day, everyone. Take care.